Thank you, everyone, for tuning in this week. We've got a special, special guest coming up. He gets two specials. I also wanted to do a little bit of housekeeping real quick. We want to keep you guys updated on the Colorado Wolf Bill. And right now, as of last week, it looks like that's going to be delayed 6 years. What they're trying to do is label the population of wolves being introduced to Colorado as an experimental population, which means there has to be a survey period. 10J is the actual legal listing for a quote-unquote threatened population, which then gives Colorado Department of Fish and Wildlife some leeway as far as allowing for a hunting season and allowing ranchers to manage their property appropriately. So that's hot off the press. That's all the housekeeping I have for the week. As this situation develops, Dave and I will keep you guys updated. Now.
Well, I've got one housekeeping.
Go for it.
There have been some questions or comments in relation to putting in for tags. And I just want to let those folks know that I am looking into it. The question was, if you put in for a party, hypothetically, let's say antelope shorter than ears, and you have a party of four people, if one of those individuals puts in for horns longer than ears and draws that tag before the shorter than ears tag cycle is drawn, does everybody get kicked out of the draw? So I'm looking into that right now, and I will be updating you guys shortly.
Housekeeping out of the way. The special, special guest, you may know him from his hit TV show, Solo Hunter. Tim Burnett's in the studio today with us. Tim, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good. Hey, hanging in there, making it another Sunday. Can I dive right in?
Yeah.
I don't think you need a lot of introduction.
I'm comfortable. I'm just going to sit here and just answer questions.
Just enjoy.
So here's something. I'll preface this. I'll give you a little backstory. I went to work in the hunting and firearms industry. Passion of mine. I thought, hey, I'm going to make this what I do as a career. Turns out I was miserable doing it. Hated it. Most of the show season in the firearms world was during hunting season. So it was like I was talking hunting, traveling, not actually hunting anymore. And I said, to hell with this. I'm getting out of it. I don't like it. I got to go do something else to put a roof over my head. But what was your growing up hunting experience? And then talk to me about when you made the mental decision to go, okay, I'm going to make a career out of this.
Yeah, gotcha. No, you sounds like you hit the you were on the sales side of things, which
yes.
I think would be absolutely miserable.
Oh God, yeah.
There's nothing worse, in my opinion, than a trade show, you know, or having to go to any of those shows. But no, I grew up hunting just like you guys did, or probably most people that that hunt now. My dad didn't hunt. My dad was the carpet layer and a school teacher, and he was doing carpet for one of the local military guys in town, who just happened to be an archer, big bow hunter, had this VHS, you know, video library of hunts. And I remember my younger brother came home. He's like, Tim, you got to come help us with this carpet job. I'm like, heck no, I'll do chores. You know, I don't want to go work. But anyway, I go over there and you go down to this guy's basement, and he had the full setup, how to, you know, he was cutting his own veins out of turkey feathers. Well, this guy was a true archer, like hardcore. And from that day on, myself, I think I was 12 at the time, and my younger brothers, we were just like, oh yeah, this is really cool. We're going to get into archery. And it just kind of just went from there, you know. Just
how many brothers you got?
I have three or four or five or six, you know.
There's a few of you running around?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few of us.
And now, who was it? One of them's done the show.
Boyd's been on the show.
Okay.
Jeremiah's kind of been in there every once in a while, but Boyd's kind of the one that everybody likes.
Yeah, everybody likes.
If I had Boyd's personality, I'd be way more popular.
Yeah, well, Boyd's he's straight traditional.
Mostly. He does hunt with a compound little bit, but his preference is his longbow.
Is his longbow?
So from there, 12 years old, you get hooked.
Yeah.
Did you ever do any guiding or
No. So, I mean, we're poor farm kids from central Idaho. So you go to school, you go to football practice, and then you go hunting on the weekends. Like, that's kind of how things went. And then getting into college, and it was all about fishing and girls at that point. And then, you know, you still try to do as much hunting as you can. It wasn't really until after I got married that, like, I finally had a job, you know, was making some money. And then shortly after that was when I met some guys that were getting into the TV world. So this would have been early 2000s. they were just getting introduced into the national television scope of things.
Okay.
And so I partnered up with those guys, and we had a show that we started on the Sportsman Channel in 2003 or 4, I think. I can't remember.
Because Solo Hunter was 2010?
Yeah, Solo Hunter started in 10. It all kind of snowballed, you know. I'm kind of a creature of opportunity. You know, I look for chance in a butt kicking, you know.
That's the hunting mentality. Yeah.
So I, you know, met with these guys. We got on the Sportsman Channel in 2004.
What was the name of the show?
It was Buck Ventures. They still run Buck Ventures. Today.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they're still on the Sportsman Channel today. So I met Jeff and we became partners and got that show going. And then shortly into it, my wife and I moved to Oklahoma because that's where they were based out of. And I learned real quick that I didn't want to be in Oklahoma. I wanted to be back in Idaho or, you know, Nevada. And so we were only there for a short time, and after breaking away from them, I was just, you know, into publishing all of my hunting videos on YouTube. I think if you were to look, I probably have the oldest hunting YouTube channel on YouTube.
I would guess. Okay.
I started in January of 2007 was when my YouTube channel was started.
And YouTube wasn't even on my radar.
It was
then.
Not. I mean, yeah. When did it start? In 2005, I think.
Four or five it started, yeah.
So I started publishing, you know, stuff to YouTube, just my random hunts and different things. And I was contacted by a group of guys out of Missouri to produce. They're like, "You produce television shows?" I was like, "Yeah, of course. Who does? I mean, yeah. No problem, right?
Opportunity."
Yeah, yeah. So got with the networks, figured out their whole system, their whole process, which I had kind of learned a little bit from the Buck Ventures days, you know, of dealing with the networks and producing. And I started editing their TV show. Shortly after they got going, I think in 2008 or 9, they lost their funding. But I was kind of a business mind in that, so I was carrying the contract with the Sportsman Channel.
Okay.
And then I was then reselling it to these guys and negotiating, doing all the sponsor negotiations and contract negotiations for them. When they lost their funding, I'm the one holding the contract, right, with the network. And I contact the Sportsman Channel, and they're like, "Well, you know, you owe us $26,000 to carry out the rest of the season. We'll go ahead and just air their stuff for the next quarter." You know, this was 13 weeks as a quarter.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, if I'm on the hook for 20 grand plus, I'm not going to promote their stuff. How about we just air some of my stuff? I've had this show concept idea, you know, called Solo Hunter. I'm like, how about we try that? And they're like, "Sweet. You get us a promo or get us an episode and we'll see what happens." So I sent him a full episode. I think I spent like 2 days editing this episode to get it to television format.
Sun up to sundown.
My wife can tell you. I go 100%. And so it's probably straight hours, you know. So they got it on a Tuesday. It went to air on Thursday. Phone started ringing on Friday. "Hey, do you have any sponsors for your show?" And it just snowballed. It took off.
Oh, that's awesome. So what was your first hunt?
The first episode was a whitetail hunt that I had filmed in northern Idaho. Yeah,
okay.
I mean, I'd been filming stuff since I was a kid all the time, but
You just decided to start dragging a camera along, or
no? It was my dad was a school teacher, and so he had these giant
VHS cameras
that the school had for some reason, and so he'd bring one home every once in a while. Of course, my brothers and sisters and I, we'd film each other jumping off the house or whatever it is, you know, doing flips off the trampoline, and then that evolved into that I'm going to go up and film these elk behind the house, and then, you know, next thing you know, you're kind of into that thing. And I remember right after I graduated high school, I was doing some bidding for a carpet company in L&K Carpet One in Pocatello, Idaho. And I saved up enough money. I went to Sears and I bought a video camera. I bought the, DVC Pro video camera or whatever is when DVC Pros first came out. So you switch from the VHS to the smaller disc thing, little tape. I bought that thing. It was $900. I remember I put it on my brother's credit card. It was like $900 and something. I'm going to go film my hunt.
Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. After the break, we'll dive right into part two of our interview with Tim Burnett. I I wanted to ask you, because I thought Solo Hunter debuted on the Outdoor Channel. Was that part of the Sportsman's Channel
thing?
No,
so when we debuted on Sportsman Channel that same year, so that was in 2010. It was either that year or the year after Outdoor Channel had acquired the Sportsman Channel.
Gotcha.
The parent
gotcha.
Company had acquired it. The brothers sold.
Okay.
Sold it, and they had acquired it. At that point, that's when what do they call them, production manager or vice president of productions contacted me and said, hey, your show's doing really well. It's rating really well. We'd really like to kind of syndicate it and pull it in under the Outdoor Channel umbrella and put some marketing behind it and really build this thing. And of course, I'm 20 something years old thinking this is going to be awesome.
I've made
late
it.
20s, right? At this point. 30, I guess, at this point. We transitioned the show over to the Outdoor Channel at that point.
Okay.
And then we ran there for quite a while.
The Remy thing.
How did you guys connect? I mean, being from Idaho and then Oklahoma, and then Remy's been a Reno.
He's a Nevada, Reno guy.
Forever. So when Solo Hunter went to air, we were actually living here in Reno at the time.
Oh, in 2010.
And in between that, in between the Buck Ventures and the Solo Hunter, I produced a show in Boise with a friend of mine, Steve Alderman. We had a show called Behind the Rack that we aired on the local Fox channel.
So you've been doing this a little while. I mean, you've like,
man. Yeah, when I was part of the Buck Ventures crew, like early on, I knew that the partnership wasn't going to last. There was just too many, issues going on. And so I shadowed the producer, the editor. I was out at his studio. It was over an hour drive from my house, but I drove out there every day to shadow him because I was like, if I'm going to really be a part of this business, I got to learn how to edit. I got to learn how to, deal with the networks. And so that's what I did for a year with him. When we moved back to Idaho after the Oklahoma stint, I bought my full editing system, computer, everything. It was over 10 grand at the time, which now you can get a pretty slick setup for a fraction of that.
Right.
Yeah.
And so then when the TV show came about with Sportsman Channel, I had 4 episodes of my own stuff that was all solo, and they were like, oh, this is amazing. We got to do
concept.
More of this. Yeah. And this is where Remy came in. So in that first season, 2 or 3 weeks into the show airing and the sponsors coming, they're like, what can we line out for season 2? And I'm like, it's October. Hunting season's pretty much over. Right. There isn't going to be a season 2, guys.
Yeah.
They're like, well, you got to do something. So I put together in the last, I think it was the last 4 or 5 weeks that the show aired, which would have been in November, December, a little promo said that, hey, are you a solo hunter? Do you film your hunts alone? Do you do this? And I can't remember the exact verbiage, but I had basically just a little commercial spot in there. If you're this guy, contact me. I want to see your footage and I want to.
He got in touch with you.
So he got in touch with me. He's like, hey, I got, a bunch of footage and everything and sent it in. And at that point, I was taking people's tapes.
Right.
So I got hundreds and hundreds of hours of tapes that guys would send me, and I'd comb through all this stuff to find the best of the best. And there was a handful of guys that were really good at it. There was a kid named Fred Waymire, which was actually from the town I grew up in back home. He was really good at it. Remy was really good at it. There was a handful of them that just really kind of had that dialed. But by about season 4, everyone was weeded out, and they were kind of like – either they weren't able to replicate it year over year or hunt over hunt, but Remy, every time, from the first time, he was able to just hammer it. In a lot of ways, I learned a lot of good filming techniques from the way he was doing things. He learned things from the way I was doing things. And, of course, you guys know him now. He's an animal. That's where the content and the show and the brand really kind of started to take off, was when we were able to narrow the cohesiveness of the production down to he and I, and doing similar styled hunts and filming it and producing it, in the same way. And that's when things really kind of took off, was in season 4, 5, 6. I think we went through 12 or 13 seasons at this point.
Being able to deliver season after season after season, that seems like it'd be an additional added pressure of like, man, I got to get this done. Nobody wants to see me suck in the woods season after season.
Turns out they like to see you suck in the woods.
Well,
I think we were one of the first shows. Remy and I, can't remember which season it was, 5 or 6. We aired probably, I think, 4 of the 13 that were no-kill episodes. And they're like, you can't give us a no-kill episode. I'm like, well, it's different. We're out there by ourselves, guys. Cut us a break. Let's just try it. Let's see what happens. Man, it was received so well. People are like, oh, I can't believe you showed a miss, or I can't believe you showed this. It's like
with your guys' show that I've watched, you guys actually talk about oh, I made a bad shot, or, oh, man, I missed it at 30 yards or something, mm-hmm. where a lot of other...
I don't miss at 30 yards, Dave.
Well, no, that's true. You don't. But you can see, like, some of the other videos where they don't really talk about that, or they don't really get into that. So,
well, so there's a macho thing, and it's still to this. I mean, it's
I'm a big, bad
TV hunter. I'm a sponsored hunter. I make a living, you know. At the end of the day, the more relatable we became to the viewers, that's where the popularity really started to grow. And I think when we left the network, there were a lot of weeks we were top 10, you know, in their ratings chart. And there's 300 shows.
Wow.
There was a lot of weeks we were top 10. And you're putting yourself in there with some pretty big names at that point. But, you know, like we talked about the deliverables, you had the network saying, we need 13. Hey, let's jump to 26. Let's do 26. And it just got to the point for me where I was chasing the marketing side, the business side, the producing it. You know, we're just busting our butts, and it finally got to the point where I just had to pull off. And, you know, that was probably one of the toughest decisions I made was in 2018 was the last year we aired on the Outdoor Channel.
Right.
Okay. And since then?
Since then, I mean, it's enabled me to do a lot different types of things.
Nice.
The shop, I started another business, done some other things for some other people in the industry to help build their business. Just a lot of very gratifying things there. And most of my sponsors stuck with me. They're like, we like what you do. Keep publishing to YouTube. Keep growing your membership on your website. You know, and then in 2020 was when Hunting House.
Yeah.
Hunting House.
You've opened an archery one-stop shop for archery hunting here in the Reno market. You guys are over off Longley.
Yep. When the whole BS and everything hit over the last couple of years, like that created a bunch of unique challenges for a lot of people, a lot of brands in the industry, a lot of different things. And I was talking with one of my sponsors at the time, and they're like, we've got all of this old inventory that we can't move. And there was bows. It was prime bows.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like we have 2-, 3-, 4-year-old inventory that is just piled up here. And, you know, we've got to figure out a way to get this stuff moved. So we worked out a plan for them to allow me to be able to sell it online. And so we put that together. I built the website, and this was in 2020, because all the other archery shops are shut down. So nobody's buying anything at this point. So I said, all right, let's do this. I'll commit to selling it and marketing it online. You guys have to drop ship it, though. And they're like, okay, we can do that. I mean, we're not shipping anything else. Might as well do that. So that took off like wildfire. I think in the first 2 weeks, I sold 88 bows in the first
That one shipment you got when I was at your shop, seeing like 4 pallets.
Yeah, we got 4
of
pallets.
Nothing but bows. Whoa. I was like, yeah, that's a lot of bows. Yeah, that was what? Like, so what is a 50 bows a pallet?
No, there's more than that. Yeah,
and so that's carrying inventory there. So this is post drop shipping.
But then they were gone.
Before shop or anything, we were just doing drop shipping. So in the first 12 months, I think we sold over 300 bows. Chandler, who now manages my shop, he and his brother Christian, who also works at the shop, they bought a couple of those online, but they wanted to swap out some limbs, do some color swaps or something, and they emailed, and I responded back. I said, guys, I got 10 orders today. I've got about 30 or 40 bows behind that I got to get shipped out. It's going to be a while. And Chandler's like, no problem. I'll just swap the limbs myself. Can I, you know, come and pick it up? I'm like, turned out he was working at Shields, running the Shields archery department.
I thought they had been around pre-Shields. Yeah.
Well, so Christian, I knew Christian from when he worked out at Cabela's years and years ago.
Okay.
I met him because I did a lot of stuff with Mike Ozzy at Cabela's.
Ozzy and Chad.
We did some
Chad
Christmas
was out there.
Films and different things. Chad.
Chad was out
who's
there.
Now at Shields.
And Mike's now with the Wild Sheep Foundation.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
He disappeared on me. I just saw him the last show and was like, dude, where have you been?
Yeah.
It's like, well, I moved to Montana anyway.
That guy's a goer, man. In fact, I talked to Mike about, you know, bringing him on when I first started looking in at opening a shop. Midway through 2020, I was like, hey, I need to do something here, you know, because at that point, that's when I knew that there was an opportunity, even if it was just 100% online. And so going into it, which I'm kind of skipping forward a little bit, my intention was always to focus on the hunting side of things with the pro shop side. But going back to when I met Chandler, when those guys bought the bows, I said, all right, let's just meet. I'll meet you after work somewhere. I'll bring the bows and then we'll hand them off. So we met in the Shields parking lot. And I'll never forget, Chandler and I were sitting in my truck talking there at the Shields parking lot, and some gal was shoplifting from one of the malls or whatever, and this big, fat security guard's chasing her across the parking lot, and Chandler and I are just kind of sitting, you know, watching this thing go on, And that was kind of the first time meeting him, but just hearing his commentary and interaction to that, I was like, right, this is my kind of guy. You know, we could get along really well here. So that
spend 8 hours a day with this guy and be okay.
Yeah. So that transpired to where I was like, look, Prime's no longer going to drop ship these bows. I got to bring them in. So I got some storage units. We're going to ship everything to. I think at that point we shipped like 300 bows to the storage units. I said, do you mind doing some stuff part-time for me just on the side? So he did. Chandler started doing a bunch of the builds and limb swaps and tunes and everything that we were shipping out. And we kept going back and forth. I was like, we're opening a shop. He's like, don't open a shop. He's like, let's open a shop. I'm like, nah, there's no way. I'm not opening a shop.
Don't touch that dial. Nevada Backcountry, brought to you by Truck Envy and Out West Buildings. We'll be right back after the break. Thanks for hanging in there over the break and rejoining us on Nevada Backcountry, brought to you by Truck Envy and Out West Buildings.
But that kind of went back and forth, and the whole time I had been kind of keeping my eye on what was going on in the area. And then just the right opportunity came along, and I hired Chandler full time, and we started looking for a building.
You carry Crispy Boots.
Yep.
I saw some Stone Glacier stuff in there.
Yep.
You've got Wilderness Athlete supplements. Yep. I mean, it is a one-stop bow hunting shop.
Yep. We've got all the Solo Hunter branded stuff in there, and that's growing. You know, we're really, it's not that we want to get into being just a hunting store. It's obviously archery carries 90% of the sales here locally, but like we're a hunting shop.
I mean, right,
it's hunting house for a reason, right? And that was the focus, is we wanted to be the go-to shop for hunters in the area, which, you know, fast forward a year and 9 months into business, that philosophy's all kind of changed a little bit, because I've realized that hunters aren't the ones buying new stuff all the time. They're not the ones that are in the archery shops all the time. The archery community, I've been really kind of blown away, you know, very grateful for how supportive and how big the archery community is outside of just hunters. You know?
Right.
You guys are both hunters, so you kind of speak the hunting language, but you're also both into the target archery world of things. So you know what I'm talking about when you say there's a whole different world that was opened up to my eyes that I didn't even have a clue existed, really.
I'm in the same boat, Tim. It wasn't until last June. And it was all because of watching my kid in that Joad program. And I went, oh man, I had a little bit of an ego, because I was like, well, I kill stuff with a bow. This is what's the big deal? You're shooting. And then I watched my daughter go through this kind of the foundations of the target archery thing. And I went, all right, so I can kill stuff with a bow, but I don't know if I could do that. And that was the launching point for me. So I'm not too far behind you as far as opening my eyes to the target side of things.
Yeah, I think I picked up my first hinge about 2.5 months ago. Because I was like, you guys, man, it's 20 yards. How hard is it? I didn't realize how bad of a shot I was until I put up the Vegas face.
I am not
a good shot at 20 yards.
And you've been so gracious at Hunting House, where you've allowed a group of us to kind of take over on Wednesdays and have our little fun league and shoot. And the small group of guys that show up there, it's just a blast. To where you're
the target bow. Yeah,
yeah, buddy.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, all right.
So, and
still not going to put a stabilizer on it, though.
But. Yeah. Well, you know, and that's one of the big things, is it being a hunter, you just have to hit something the size of a pie plate from 20 yards and out, where when you're a competitive shooter, you got to shoot something the size of a dime.
Yeah, you're shooting your thumbnail all day long.
Yeah, you're shooting your thumbnail all day long at 20, 30, and 40 yards.
It's been fun. I mean, like I said, the archery community really, I mean, it didn't hurt to be who we were coming into it.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
I
mean,
no. We had Remy did some mentions on his podcast. I think I had my podcast running at the time. We made some mentions. Social media, we're strong. I mean, that really enabled us to get the word out quickly that we had a shop. And we literally started with one Costco fold-out table and a press, and then Chandler brought his workbench. And then we had all the primes lined up against the wall. At that point, we were still ordering accessories off of Lancaster and wherever we could, paying retail.
Retail.
Ouch.
To set everything up. And then we just added account after account after account. And
But the way you went about it was done so well.
I went into it saying, of course, I had all the prime sales to
back it up.
To have some backing there or whatever. Yeah. But you know, I went out and said, I've got X number of dollars and we're going to put it into this and we're going to get this inventory. This is what we're going to have. And basically all the money was to buy all those prime bows. So I took $20,000 from another business of mine, $20,000 in cash. I remember I had it in my where I count all, because it's a vending business, and so it's all in cash and coin. I deposited $20,000 in ones and fives into my account. So this is my loan. I'm loaning Hunting House $20,000, and we're going to buy this much inventory. And I said, Chandler, go for it. What can you get? And he's like, not much. You know.
Yeah.
The humbling thing to me, and the thing that is very gratifying to me, is I wanted the shop to build itself, and that's what it's done.
Yeah.
It wasn't me that built Hunting House. It wasn't. I mean, Chandler's been a huge part of it, but it was the customer. It was the community, the archery community in the Reno, Northern California area that has built Hunting House into what it is today, where we've got hundreds of thousands of dollars in inventory now. But you guys built it. It wasn't me. It's your money that built that shop, which to me should give everybody, all of our customers, a sense of gratification, because they're now building the next step, which is the 100%. Archery center, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You guys built this, so we're building it for you and for the community. This is the Reno Archery Center. It's not just going to be Tim's Hunting House. This is a place where people can go and learn archery and learn of the history of archery and hunting and just increase, you know, their awareness of why we all love it so much.
I thought it was so cool. And being a local, small mom and pop or pop and son operation, as I am, I thought it was extremely cool. The first time I went into your shop, Tim personally came out and thanked me. And I thought, how many times do you go into a shop and the owner, who is, you might cringe at this term, but, you know, a celebrity in this community, how many times do they come out and personally thank you for spending money in their store? I mean, I thought, what a nice guy. And I know we've talked, our paths had crossed before that. We have some mutual friends. But I just thought that small little gesture of like, hey, thank you for coming in and spending money. I went, yeah, I probably ought to come in here more often, because I know what an uphill battle it is to be a small local business owner competing against corporate entities.
Right. No, and I appreciate that. And I hope that there's a lot of stories like that, you know, because we've all made it a point to be very grateful for the customers that come in. So I hope that your story isn't a one-off, right?
And I've seen you do it with other people.
But it's genuine. Like it really is genuine, because, you know, as a business owner, you know what you're on the hook for with, I got to make sure that Chandler's kid's fed at this point, right?
You know?
I mean, I got to make sure Christian's is paid and everything goes and flows nicely. So it is a true, genuine thank you when somebody makes a purchase. You know, hopefully we can continue to give everybody that one-on-one attention. And the other side of it too is I really do love that shop. It has been
such an
amazing career transition for me to pull away from the quasi chest thumping industry where you've got to be somebody and do something, to where I could really pull back and look at how we're contributing to society, how we're contributing to the local community. And all the money I make goes right back into the community anyway. All the money Chandler and Christian make goes right back into the community anyway, you know. And it's not like it's a billion-dollar business, you know. But it's very, very, very appreciated when customers come in the door. And it makes you feel proud that you're building something that people are actually stoked to be a part of, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Dave, I cut you off, man.
I totally forgot.
You lost your train of thought.
You got me so emotional, man.
Dry your eyes and let's move on.
Yeah. We had a guy in the other day that he was like, you know, you guys take cash? I was like, dude. And I kind of got a little bit emotional. I'm like, you don't realize that this company was started on cash.
Ones and fives.
Yeah. That's your dance money, right?
Yeah.
You know? Dance money. It was started so humbly, and you know, at some point I hope I can look back at it and say, like, you know, we did something pretty special there.
Let's make the leap to hunting.
Okay.
Favorite species?
Ooh, you know, probably mule deer.
Yeah.
That's what I've killed the fewest of, and I don't know. They're getting their butts kicked. Like, they're special, you know.
Mule deer
are awesome. You can hunt them every year. I mean, everybody loves to say sheep and all that kind of thing, but they're kind of just that one-offs, right? You only get to hunt those a few times in your life if you're lucky. Fortunately, here in Nevada, we're luckier than most, where we can actually get an opportunity to do that, and that's thanks to, you know, guys like Dave and the community and NBU and all that too. But I think probably mule deer. There was a time it was elk, but elk are heavy, and so you pack enough of those out by yourself, you realize, yeah, maybe I'm going to hunt deer a little more.
I'm cool deer, with the mule deer.
Deer and antelope. No, it is nice when you do see a really big mule deer. It gets the blood moving.
I'm a mule deer guy, too. Favorite part of the country to hunt mule deer?
Gosh, you said favorite part of the country, and I was already on Alaska. But it's Nevada. I mean, Nevada. Bow hunting. I love the high desert. I love velvet bucks. I don't like the heat at all. I wish they were in velvet in September, but they're
not. Oh, my God. Wouldn't that be nice? Is that what brought you to Nevada? Was the hunting, or was there another?
Yeah, hunting first, my wife second. You know, so she grew up here. So.
Does she listen to this show?
I was about to say, I'm not going to edit that out. You want to reverse that?
Please say.
No, my wife does. My wife has not seen one of my episodes in probably 5 or 6 years or whatever. She does. She rarely ever watches anything. I remember being on a hunt 3 or 4 years ago, and I bring a satellite phone with me so I can call them. And she's like, "We watched this hunt." And I'm like, you know, her and the kids sat and watched it on YouTube. And I'm like, "Babe, you do realize I did that hunt like 10 years ago, right?" You know, she just doesn't keep up with it. I don't think she really knows what.
And she doesn't hunt herself?
No. Which I'm grateful for. That gives me my time.
If you're anything like me, you've gotten the enough is enough speech from your significant other. Before you go out and do something foolish this season, get in touch with my guy Irvin. He's got plenty of man cave options to protect those priceless mounts and might even help save your marriage along the way. Just go to outwestbuildings.com. Favorite part of the country, you were going to say Alaska.
Yeah.
The hunting up there or just in general?
Just in general. The bigness of it. And of course, maybe that's because you get to fly around in it in a Super Cub and see parts of it that a lot of people don't get to see. But I've been able to experience it several times now. There's nothing like a backpack style, covering as many miles as you can in the amount of time that you have. And when you got 14 to 16 days, you're not worried about pushing too hard that day, you know, you've got time.
Right,
on your hands.
Right.
So to be able to experience the countryside, we did a doll sheep hunt with a friend of mine up there, and we didn't have any set, this is where we're going to, we're going to hunt there, and then we're coming back. It was, all right, we got 13 miles to get out of the park to where we can get to where we can hunt. Then from there, we're going to cover these basins, and we're just going to go. And I'll never forget it. He's as hardcore as anybody. He's like, "Do you want to go over that?" Yeah, let's go. You get over that ridge, and then you go down to the valley, and then it's like, "Well, should we go check and see what's on this one?" And it's like, "Yep." And we put in almost 100 miles in 14 days, you know, on this hunt. And that was a hunt that I killed my ram. Randy Newberg killed his sheep, and then his cameraman killed his sheep. And so it was like, I mean, it was 14 days of balls out.
Going.
Awesomeness.
Going, yeah.
And you're just everything. And there was no limitations to where you wanted to go and see. And you pretty much saw everything in that amount of time.
Yeah, no like, "Oh, we got to worry about this property line," or just if you see it, you can go.
We just did a grizzly hunt 2 years ago, I guess, in Alaska with that same outfitter friend. He's a college buddy who got his master's guide license in Alaska. We did the same thing, and I was watching that with my, might have been my daughter or somebody. But I was like, "You see those mountains way in the background over there?" Because we, from the start of the hunt, like, "Those mountains way over there." I'm like, "That's where I killed my bear." And they were looking at that. They hit pause, and they're like, "You went from where you're standing here over to that mountain range, and you killed your bear over there?" I'm like, yeah, that's what we did, you know? And it's not that it was that hard or that special or that, you know, Herculean of an effort. It was just that we did it, and it was amazing, you know? And you just go from one point A to point B to C to D, and next thing you know, you're at Z and you're going home.
But something like that, though, to most hunters, they see that expanse and they're like, I'm not hosing hunters, but most will look at that and go, "That's too far."
There's nowhere in the lower 48 that I can't get to a road in a day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Completely.
Montana might have some exceptions. You know, central Idaho may have some of those exceptions where you can't get to a road in a day. There's very few opportunities to load 2 weeks worth of stuff on your back and say, I'll be back in 2 weeks, you know, from the truck, and to be able to just have, just go. Most people don't hunt that way. And it's not practical to hunt elk that way. It's not really practical to hunt deer that way, or even, I mean, I wanted to hunt sheep that way here on my sheep tag a couple of years ago, Dave. And it's like, why? You know, I mean, it's not feasible. But when you do have the opportunity to do something like that, man, there's nothing greater in life to me than having, well, aside from family, of course. And there's going to be water where you're going, and you just go. You know, you just cover some country.
It's a great feeling. My son and I did it last year up in Arc Dome, and it was just cool. Everything's on your back. You go.
That's amazing.
You stop where you stop, and you camp.
100%. It's a disconnect from the real world. Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah.
I will say it's easier to do that in Alaska than it is here, though, because you're starting at zero and you're going to 4,500 feet, you know?
Right.
Or whatever. I think the highest we got on my bear hunt or my sheep hunt was 4,500 feet above sea level. Well, shoot, we live at that here. So when you're talking about doing that at 10,000 feet plus, that's a whole different level of.
Suck.
It hurts.
It is. And
you're an Idaho guy, so you'll appreciate this. I'm heading up here end of May into the Selkirks with my brother hunting bears, spring bear. There are those places where you're not worried about property boundaries. You're not worried about, I see a hunter over there. It's just kind of like, hey, we're going up into the southern end of the Canadian Rockies. We see another person, I'll be amazed. Hopefully we find some bears.
Country's vast up there. Huge.
That'll
be a great time. That'll be a great time.
He lives in Coeur d'Alene, and he complains about the pressure up there in northern Idaho and more people getting out in the woods. But my point always to him, and he grew up down Douglas County here, but my point to him is you get to do it. Do you know how happy I would be if I had over-the-counter elk tags every year? So I don't want to hear a complaint that your little spot, you saw another truck. You get to hunt elk 40 minutes from your house. That's awesome.
Yeah, locals are not hunting the same herds that implants are hunting. I mean, guys that are coming to Nevada aren't hunting the same herds that you and I or whoever else is.
Right.
I look at my case in Idaho, like people aren't hunting. Locals are hunting the elk that I'm hunting there. People from out of town are going deep or they're going to other places to hunt elk. So it's a totally different thing. But he could go out on a Thursday afternoon if he wanted. He could cut work on a Tuesday. Yeah. Do it if you wanted to.
And go chase elk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For us to go up there, we got a week's amount of time, and that's when we have to hunt. You know,
right.
Everybody's going to hit that second, third week of September for elk anyway.
So for this year, what is your number one tag you want? Anywhere. Ooh. I mean, all the places that you're putting in this year, like what is your holy grail tag?
My holy grail tag has been the same tag for my entire life is sheep back home. Rocky Mountain Bighorn sheep in the Lost River Valley. Like that's all I want to do is be able to hunt sheep there. Growing up as a kid, there was a ton of sheep and they'd come down into the ag fields and you were able to see them there. They've had struggles with die off and coming back. But to me, the holy grail is drawing a Rocky Mountain Bighorn sheep tag in the Lost River Valley.
Fingers crossed for you this year.
Yeah,
it will be. Yeah. Well, I mean, Rocky's pretty much anywhere coveted tag.
What are you putting in for in Nevada?
I'll do them all. I'm kind of up in the air right now. My brother, Boyd, who's in Montana, he's got a few points. I got a few points. And we like to hunt together as much as we can, but his time is limited with his work. His busiest time is in August.
What's his 9 to 5?
He's over all the dams. What is he, a dam engineer?
A dam engineer.
But he's over all, I think, 11 or 12 of the dams in Montana. So they've got to do all of their, I think all of their reporting. There's a lot of on-site stuff that happens in the end of July, 1st of August.
Okay.
And then he has all of his reporting and everything that has to be done in August. So the first he can get down here is like the end of the month, you know. By then I'm done. I'm moved on. I'm ready to go somewhere else. But
Go chase.
So it's kind of up in the air. If he can squeak out a few days, then we'll put in together and hopefully draw it together. We've done it a couple, or just once actually, that we've drawn it together. I'm willing to put it off a couple of years if I can to be able to hunt with him.
But yeah.
If he doesn't commit this year, though, I'm going to burn some points and draw me a tag.
Good for you. So. Yeah. Favorite area to hunt elk in Nevada?
In Nevada, I've only hunted elk one time. I had that tag. It's actually that same episode you're talking about there, Dave, where my Satfo went out. That was 061071.
Oh, okay.
Was that the one with your son where you went with the baseball guys?
Yep, yep.
Yeah, he abandoned you?
Yep, yeah. they were pretty selfish and went after the herd of elk, and they bumped him out, and then me and Hudson went after him, and that was an amazing experience. But I ended up not killing an elk that year, and so I had to wait 5 years, and now I'm back to having a stockpile of points, so I could draw that tag this year. You never know. Yeah. But I got turned on to that area from Dan Evans with the Trophy Taker. He's now Option Archery, but he kind of keyed me into that area a little bit because it was kind of up and coming at the time.
Yeah. It's a good area.
You know, I don't like the eastern part of the state. I don't want to deal with any of the guides or outfitters or any of that chaos that goes on over there. I'm just not into that. I'd rather hunt a smaller population of elk than to deal with any of that.
The madness, yeah.
I've heard stories, and I don't want to deal with that. You know, I'm not interested. Yeah. I'd rather go shoot a raghorn somewhere, you know.
Yeah. Away from people.
Yeah. Totally. I hunt Monday through Friday for a reason.
Yeah.
It's not just so I can go to church on Sundays. It's just so I can get away from people.
See, we used to, 192 down there, Genoa, family's down there. We know.
And he's paying somebody because somebody I'd love to draw 192 tag. Twice.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. 2 years in a row, I've drawn it three times. I think my family's drawn it seven or eight. But anyway,
bragging.
I'll tell you who you got to tip.
I put in all this close stuff, but I'm never going to draw it.
Same here, ever.
But I've gotten away from, I don't think I'm going to put in for it this year. And my wife had that tag, years and years ago. And she got screamed at by somebody. And it was just one of those experiences where I went, this is not why I want to be as far back in the mountains away from people as humanly possible. So I'm with you on that.
Fortunately, we were able to hack Endow's website, and we were able to, you know, adjust the algorithms to where only the Reno area is going to draw tags. So nobody in Vegas is going to draw a tag. It's everybody.
Everyone in Reno.
Archery tags. Yeah. We didn't mess with the gun tags. It's just only archery.
Muzzleloader and gun, leave those alone. Archery. Just
all archery tags within 100 miles of Reno.
Tim, sincerely, thank you for sitting down with us. Appreciate what you are doing currently for the archery community in Reno. So for me personally, sincerely, thank you.
No, thank you.
Very much so. Thank you.
Coming up at 11, Tom Gresham's Gun Talk on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.